All right. Well, you ready?
Ready, my friend. Hello.
At the movies. We're here, Mo. We're here. Here talking about, finally, you know, we enjoyed your director, your pick last week, but finally, the stupid boys from At the Movies.
I was gonna make a joke as soon as, yeah, are here to talk
about one of Kubrick's first films, a 1956 film, The Killing, an American film noir directed by none other than Stanley Kubrick himself, who we're talking about alongside John Carpenter this season. I actually enjoyed this film. Well, I actually enjoyed it. I gotta say, I was usually, and I hate to say this, but sometimes black and white films don't like hit with me. It's easy for me to get distracted. But I was fully invested throughout this whole film.
Yeah, give us the year on this one. I think you may have already said it, but
1956.
So when I go through, I keep a lot of stats on my Letterboxd account. And anyone that would like to join Letterboxd, I'll throw out my handle at the end of it. I would love to connect with some of our listeners on there.
But I think this is the oldest film we've watched so far in any of our.
Yeah, what I was going to say,
I think.
What I was going to say was this is a blind spot for me, I think. I think I've seen films like from the 60s and forward. I've seen a lot of films from the 40s and back to like 1925. I've seen a lot of like Universal Horror and things like that, silent films. But like the 40s and 50s themselves are kind of a blind spot for me. And I actually watched another 50s film this weekend, just randomly, called The Angry Red Planet. That was very cool. It's a sci-fi film that is on Prime. It uses animation and live action to depict Mars, and it's a lot of fun. But all of this to say, I did not know what to expect from The Killing.
I didn't either, and, man. I didn't either, to be honest with you. I think this was like one of the films that I didn't know what to expect when I picked it at first.
Yeah, and I feel similarly to you in the sense that it's not a problem with black and white films for me, but it is a thing of like, you know, I went into this with the expectation that nothing was going to happen. I was kind of prepared for the worst. Not that I thought it'd be a bad movie, but attention span wise for myself, I was like, all right, you know, this movie's fortunately it's short, mm-hmm. like an hour and a half. It actually was. It's like an hour, 25 minutes.
85 minutes. So yeah, hour and 25.
I was like, you know, I'm just hoping for better than what I'm expecting, which is like nothing happening. And a lot happens, actually. And even like maybe not action wise per se, but this is one of the retrospective reviews I read on this described it as like a movie that works because it's just a great scene after great scene. Like it's just a collection of great scenes. And that's really how it feels to me.
I think if you look at this film too, like you can start to see like where like Kubrick's like stamp on all of these like different films that come after it. You can see the kind of these directors that come after him, like even Scorsese and Tarantino and all these people. You can start to see like even scenes from this film, you can kind of be like, oh, that's what inspired like some of these scenes in other films, moving forward. Like as early as 1956, Kubrick was putting his stamp, not even known yet, for film, which was cool.
I'll tell you, Scorsese was definitely a thought that went through my mind. Mm-hmm. Pulp Fiction as well went through my mind. The Tarantino dialogue thing.
The Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, feels very close to this. There is a lot of dialogue in this film, but it is interesting. The characters are great in this. They're fleshed out. They all have identities. Conversations feel important. And you are invested in what they're saying. And it leads up to, you know, the heist of the film. It's great pacing because, like I said, the movie's short, but there's a lot of dialogue. But you just kind of get really invested with the characters and what they're saying to each other up until the point where the heist happens, which is probably between the second and third act. It's like that kind of, you know, three quarters of the way into the film.
But you actually get invested into the characters, though. The dialogue in this film, the writing, the script, and the way they're interacting with each other, you actually get invested in almost every character. and like kind of how they end up throughout the film, especially like Johnny and George and George's wife there, you start to like really like learn about them quickly, which is not something that like you see really too much anymore. They didn't spend a lot of time like talking about them, like in their personality traits, but you find out really quickly through the dialogue in this film, like who they are as persons or as people.
Yeah, definitely. The dialogue like paints a great picture. I mean, George and Shelley, I think was his wife's name. I think okay. those are the two that I would say the best examples of like George, you know, you're like, this dude is a pushover. Like right away, you're like, this dude is just getting trampled on yep. by everyone around him. And Shelley is so evil. She's yep. so
and she knows it too. She knows that George is a pushover, and she's yep. taking it all the way to the top.
Yep. But it also does this great thing of like, that doesn't mean that you automatically like, I found myself not liking George's character.
I didn't like George because, either, actually. So that's cool.
You know, and it's this thing where it's like, just because he's a pushover, Kubrick writes him so well that you don't necessarily have this empathy for him. You're kind of like, you see through him and you're like, what is this guy's problem? Why is he not, you know, mm-hmm. taking control of the situation? Or so yeah, the characters are just so well fleshed out. There's this really interesting documentary style voiceover that gives, I love this. It gives specific times for everything that's happening, and you know, whether those matter or not, it's a nice touch. This feels very much like the heist film that laid out what it, you know, a heist film should be. I thought about the Ocean's films yep. during this too. And just how everyone, you know, it's a group of people. Everyone has their own specific job, but they have to do it at a specific time in order to pull the thing off.
And that's one of the things I loved about this film though, man, is like when we started getting into like the actual meat of this film and the heist, having that like narration over it being like, Johnny knows that he needs to be at the place at 4:23 yeah. and Maurice needs to be at the bar. And it's like, you see them play through their role, and then we go back and we see the yep. other, you know, member play through their role, and we go back and we keep doing this swinging forward and backward until like the actual end, you know, of the heist, which I thought was well done. That was my favorite part of this film. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. The things, you know, it's just great because it's like somebody firing on all cylinders. I feel like this wouldn't be like my favorite Kubrick movie or anything, but it was such a valuable experience to watch this and kind of see the places from where he was starting, because mm-hmm. yes, it does have the look and feel of a film from its era, but you can absolutely start to see Kubrick's eye for photography in this. Some of the shots look fantastic. The way just like he frames things.
Yeah. And even the editing of it, like going back and forth, like seeing that horse yep. think that like corral keep coming back and forth to like reset the scene, I thought was like interesting choice to do. Like every time like we reset the scene, there was that like horse race, that like corral, that guy kept coming on the track and it would like reset again, which was pretty well done, I think.
Yeah. I think a movie from this era would often do this thing where, so like there is one shot that stuck out in my mind as being very Kubrick, and we follow a man who is getting on a, if I remember correctly, he's leaving a storefront and he's getting on a bus. And I think a movie from this time would do three different shots. They'd be like, here's the man in the store, and then he leaves the store and it'd be like, now I'm at the bus stop, and then it would be a shot of like, now I'm getting on the bus. Kubrick follows him to the door where he exits, and then he goes left and films him getting onto the bus through the window of the storefront. And just little things like that made it feel like a Kubrick film, made it feel mm-hmm. like more than just a product of its era, you know? So you see that, and you have this guy firing on all cylinders in terms of like writing and directing is very, very good. And then even like, there's not a lot of like action per se,
no,
but they have this wrestler
yeah.
guy who's meant to start a fight at the with the bartender so that security will be distracted. And this scene was so much fun to watch. It was awesome. I don't know if this guy was actually a pro wrestler or not, but he's doing these wrestling moves on this on these cops. They run at him to stop him, and he like picks him up and puts him on his shoulder and like twirls him around and throws him. And
yeah, actually interesting point of the actor that played Maurice here, the wrestler, his name was Nicholas Nestor, the Koala Kowarni, and known by the ring name Nick, the wrestler. He was a Georgian professional wrestler and chess player. So he was an actual wrestler. Wow. They got a real wrestler to play that, which was cool.
He does great in this. Everyone's, much like a heist, everyone is doing their job very well. My favorite actor in this was the actor that played the sharpshooter.
Oh, Nick?
His characteristics, the way that he spoke and the way the faces he made, just felt like I was watching a real character actor, you know, from that time period.
Speaking, you know, it's funny, speaking about character actors, you know, the actor that played Nicky there, his name is Timothy Carey. So no relation to Jim Carrey.
So he was a character actor.
A character actor.
So this it's you get these different doses of things, and I agree with you, there was technical stuff that I was really impressed with for the time. I mean, this might just show off how much like film knowledge I don't have about this time period, but I was just racking my brain when they have the shot that is following the horses running around the track. I was like, how did they do this in 1959? I really don't know, you know, or 58 or 57, whenever this was filmed, because you got this camera going at high speeds that's tracking the horses as they're, I'm specifically talking about this close-up shot where these horses are running. I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they had I mean, because they're not shooting on a soundstage. Unless it's some kind of stock footage, but even then, I'm like, how did they get it? Did they, you know, do they have some kind of camera slide out on a hill that they're, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure back in like 1956 and the 50s here, like they're really like inventing these, like they're, you know, this is like independent filmmaker like territory here where they're like, we need to make this contraption so this big camera that we have can swing left to right into it. Like, so they're building and they're setting the stage for the rest of these. Like, now it's so easy, like different things that are just made to make film making a lot easier than it was back then. Yeah, kind of like setting the tone.
Absolutely. This was a pleasant surprise. And I expected, this is on me, I guess, I expected a movie that didn't feel like a Kubrick movie. I expected to see where he started, but I kind of expected it to just feel like a black and white 50s film.
Yeah, I definitely expected it to be a lot flatter than what it was, but it definitely, like, I was expecting it to kind of fall a little bit flat from expectations. And I figured when I originally picked out this film, I figured, all right, this 1956 film, it wasn't his first film, but it'll give us a nice baseline of where Kubrick was and where he's going to end up by the time we finish this season. And it actually exceeded my expectations, like by a lot.
Another Tarantino thing, spoilers if you haven't seen The Killing. I don't know why you're watching this, but if you have, or why you're listening to this, but if you haven't seen The Killing, it is streaming for free on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it the way Kubrick intended, with commercial breaks.
Yep. Me too. nothing like watching a film from the 50s with commercials from 2021. So
right, for like Uber Eats. Yep. And, but spoiler, almost everyone dies. Yep. It's a very Tarantino-esque ending. Everyone except for Jack, that's his name.
Who, the main, main guy?
Yeah.
Johnny.
Yeah, is it Johnny?
Johnny.
Everyone but Johnny and Faye, right? Faye is his girlfriend there. So there's Shelley's lover, Val, who she's having an affair with. She puts him up to steal the money. And George has had enough of being a pushover. And there is a shootout between George and Val. And Val and his buddy get murked. And George and the rest of the heist squad that's there gets murked. George makes it back home just so that he can kill Shelley. I was like, this is intense for the time.
Well, that was...
Like, it was bloody, but it was definitely intense.
Well, it's interesting seeing it in black and white, because like George is just covered in blood. And he's like, they're at the door, and he's like, I need to go to the hospital. And she's just like, well, go, George, well, go. Like, you're going to die. Like, you should go now. And he's like, call me an ambulance. He's like, drive yourself. And he was just like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And then he shoots her, and she dies the fastest I've ever seen anybody die. He, like, shoots her, and she's like, oh, no, and then falls over. Then George ends up dying, but he takes the bird with him, and then the scene Birds ends up George's head. George's head is just laying there with the bird just like chirping.
Yeah, birds talking the whole time. It's funny that you say that because the on-screen deaths are very 50s,
yep.
In a fun way where it's like Nick's death and Shelley's death are both like, you'll hear the gun noise and then they go like, ooh. And like, there's no bullet hole. There's no blood. And then they could kind of just like topple over. They're like,
especially like with Nick's death there, we see him like, he's like trying to get out. He shoots the horse and then he like speeds off, but he ends up running over the horseshoe that, the gentleman at the beginning was like, hey, sir, it's your lucky day. And he's like, get out of here. I don't want to talk to you. And then he ends up backing up over the horseshoe that the security guard threw down. And then Nick just like gets shot and then falls 50 feet out of the car.
Yeah. Yep. And as much as I enjoyed his performance, his character, it's definitely, I feel like, irony on Kubrick's part because his character says some racist stuff to this guy that's just trying to be friendly to him because he's trying to pay attention to the race and he's got this job to do and he's trying to get the guy to go away and he says some racist stuff and the guy was going to give him this horseshoe for good luck. So it's ironic that as he's trying to get away, he runs over the horseshoe and, you know, little things like that I don't know, maybe I'm not giving people from the 50s and 60s enough credit. I just feel like this is a smarter movie than I was really anticipating. And it really does foreshadow those directors that we mentioned, you know. How'd you feel about the ending?
So we got to talk to the whole time we hear this voice and he's like, Johnny knew that if the drop was wrong, he had to keep on going. And then I thought Johnny was going to get away. Like, I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is a perfect. He's got that briefcase. He threw out the keys. You know, he's getting to the airport. And then right when he like meets up with Faye there, they get to the airport and you start to go, oh, no. Like right when the check-in counter and he was just like, I need to take this with me. And the clerk's like, nope. And he's like, call your supervisor. And the supervisor's like, well, there is something we can do, sir. And Johnny's like, all right, cool, cool, cool. And he's like, well, I'll offer you a full refund. And he's like, refund? Refund? He almost should have taken it, though, because the FBI, I assume the cops or the FBI are all over this airport, like waiting for somebody to fly away. And then the big reveal, that little dog from the beginning that you see that you thought was not going to have any role in this film runs out and onto the tarmac, starts chasing the driver that's driving out the luggage. And we started to see the briefcase just go left to right, left to right, left to right. And it just smashes on the ground. And one of the most comedic like timing I've ever seen, just $2 million just flying all over the airport.
It's so good. I just thought the briefcase was gonna get like fall off or get left behind or someone else was gonna pick it up. It is genuinely an amazing looking it is a beautiful shot of all of the money just flying.
And I think we gotta give Kubrick credit. I mean, you talk about like the budget for this film was $300,000, but it was actually ended up being $2,300,000. And they wasted that all on there. You know, they never got that back. They used real money. So they used $2 million to just go all over the airport. I'm like, that's crazy. For 1956, that's a lot of money to just put, hey, credit onto them for being the most realistic. But
I can absolutely see Kubrick being like, it has to be real. The audience will know. It has to be green. We're filming in black and white. I don't care.
Shades
and hues must be correct.
I wonder if Kubrick was like the Kubrick we end up knowing from like The Shining and all these other movies, like when he became a more established director. I wonder if he was more critical like back then, or if like, is this like, or was he maybe easier to work with back then? I'd like to know.
Great question. he was a photographer before this, and that's where obviously his eye for detail comes from, and his shots and everything. Being a photographer, I feel like is more of a less. I'm not a photographer, so I could be talking out my ass, but I feel like that's a less collaborative profession. You kind of have say, you're the person taking the picture. You kind of have say over what the image is going to be. I'm definitely curious as to when he started collaborating with other people and making films, was he immediately very exerting a lot of control over it, or was he initially more open to collaboration? I'm not really sure, but I will say that whether it is not to take anything away from the actors, whether it's them or whether it's Kubrick, another thing that I would just say is that the performances in this film are excellent. They are like higher level of performance than other media from the time. And
I was gonna say something and then my brain shot out.
As far as the cast and performance goes, though, most of these actors were established actors when they played in this film. It wasn't like they got the cover, like you can see like Sterling Hayden, like right on the back. So I'm assuming back in the 50s, like Sterling Hayden was the main guy, the Tom Cruise of like 1956.
They do a great job of, playing characters that you're not supposed to like. That's, a great actor can play a character that you are like, God, I hate that person. And George and Shelley's performances are both excellent performances of people that you just hate to watch,
mm-hmm.
Everyone does a really, really good job here. It's just really well-rounded, honestly. It's a great starting place, I think, for people that are not for, I wouldn't say that this is the film you should start with for Kubrick. It would be interesting to start this early, but for us, I would say this is a really effective look back on what he did.
Yeah.
And I would definitely recommend this movie. I would say that people who are interested in Kubrick or people who like older films or even just neo-noir heist films, definitely go check this out. It's free right now, absolutely worth watching.
Talk about the initial reception here over on Wikipedia. It says, without proper release across the United States, the film actually performed poorly at the box office. It failed to turn a profit. However, it garnered critical acclaim, so it ended up picking up after. So right when it came out, nobody really saw it. And then after the fact, like, it started picking up steam, which is really cool to see. Because I wonder if this didn't end up picking up. I wonder if we would have never seen like some of these like, the films that we're going to talk about now, like A Clockwork Orange or Full Metal Jacket. Like if Kubrick failed on this film, like would that have been like the nail in the coffin, or would we have seen like maybe like less quality films from Kubrick? Would he have never been
right
the Kubrick that we know today?
I'm going to have to do some research because I am curious when that leap is. If there even is a leap, but like that leap between the films that we know of him and the films that we don't know from him kind of happens. I feel like, and this is one that we aren't talking about this season, but I do feel like Lolita is like the first movie title that I would recognize out of his filmography.
I agree.
Spartacus, I recognize the name Spartacus, but I never connected it with Kubrick.
Well, you talk about like Spartacus has been a big thing, like past like the Kubrick. Ever, like, yeah.
Right, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm very curious, and I don't know, does it connect with the leap from black and white to color? I really don't know. It looks like his first. So he actually edited, Dr. Strangelove is another big one. I think that's a hallmark, but 2001, he also edited that film and was director of special effects as well. So maybe that is when he really starts to take control over more than just the director's seat, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll tell you what. I can tell the people, the listeners, though, that even though we're only doing five films, I am personally invested and interested, and I'm sure that we are going to do some research, and we'll have plenty more to say about Kubrick as the season goes on.
Yeah, so. I definitely think, like, as much as I wanted to choose Lolita as the first film, it just I couldn't after, like, it just
the subject matter is uncomfortable, and I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I'm definitely gonna. I think I need to watch it, but
I'm gonna watch it. I'm curious about it. I'm curious about how it's handled. It feels like if we're doing a, you know, Kubrick analysis, that it should probably happen. So we probably won't do an episode on it, but I bet we'll probably touch on it. I think that was on Netflix as well.
We can touch correctly on it a little bit for sure. I just, you know, keeping the podcast subject matter a little light.
All right. Well, later this week, we're going to be watching The Many Saints of Newark, which is actually very fitting, considering the themes, how we lined up Halloween and Halloween Kills, and now The Killing and mm-hmm. Many Saints of Newark. And next week we will be watching.
I wonder if I'll like The Many Saints of Newark. So excited for it.
I can't wait to record that episode because it hasn't happened yet. We haven't done that.
Nope.
We haven't even watched the movie, and who's to say? I personally think that it's going to be the best piece of Sopranos property ever created.
Yeah, I think I'm at least going to watch it 3 times.
I bet there's going to be no fan service at all, and I bet that the story is going to make sense and have a beginning, middle, and end, and not rely on anything from a pre-existing franchise.
And we won't see Ray Liotta at all.
We definitely won't see him as twins. Certainly not. Tune in for that.
Do you want to give our Patreon? Do you want to tell our listeners the news and what's going on with the podcast? And
yes, absolutely. Shout out to our Patreon members, Dylan Painter, Jay Irvin, and Tyler Buckley. We really appreciate you. Thank you for the support. This podcast, we have been doing the video version. How long have we been doing the show now? A while.
Probably 8 months.
I think The Many Saints of Newark is our 50th episode, which is kind of funny. So we've been doing the podcast for a while, and you know, these videos have been a lot of fun to do. I like having the option to watch content creators, to see their face and listen to them talk. But that being said, we are pushing the audio version of our podcast. We think it's a lot more convenient for people.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen on any platform that you want to. You can do things, you know, you could throw it on before you go to sleep, or you can do the dishes or whatever you do while you listen to podcasts. But we aren't going away. We are still going to record the video versions of these podcasts. They are just going behind the paywall. And when I say paywall, I mean $3 a month. So it is less than a cup of coffee. If you enjoy seeing our beautiful faces, you are more than welcome to we would love to have you. If you'd subscribe to the Patreon, join our friends here. We will, we haven't really, it's been a while since we watched the movies in Discord together. But we'd love to get some people in there and take advantage of that. Have some watch parties for these movies before we record the episodes. And you get all kinds of bonus videos and photos and all kinds of stuff. So we appreciate everyone that's watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not going anywhere. We hope you still listen to the show. We hope you share it with a friend. A review on Apple Music is super, super helpful. So if that's something you can do, that'd be wonderful. But if you do have the $3 handy a month and you like our content, we would love to have you join the community.
And don't forget, we've been someone's been quoted of saying we're the two handsomest boys in podcasting. So that happened to be our moms, but hey, if you want to see our faces, Patreon, let us know. The two
My
handsomest
mom would never say that.
The two handsomest boys in podcasting.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Well, I'm excited for the rest of the season. I'm excited to watch Kubrick grow, and I'm excited to see some more Carpenter films, which I don't think I've seen that much of. So,
absolutely. Have you seen The Thing?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think so.
Buddy, it is I think our guest that we are, I think, going to have on for the episode, it is his and I's favorite horror film of all time.
Oh, wow. I'm excited. I don't think I've seen it. I think if you're saying it's your favorite, then, and if I can't remember watching it, then I definitely didn't watch it. Because I'm sure if it's your favorite, it would have at least left a mark on me that I would have remembered. So
awesome. Well, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Look forward to that next week. That's what we're doing next week. Mm-hmm. And VHS 94.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what am I? Yeah. So I'm sorry, guys. Many Saints in Newark coming up this week, next week, Thing, and VHS 94. You can watch. I don't know if the Thing is. I will figure out if the Thing is streaming, but Many Saints in Newark is on HBO Max, and VHS 94 is on Shudder. So
I'll look it up real quick for the Thing streaming. It is. You can watch it on Stars, Google Play Movies, Sling TV with the premium subscription, Amazon Prime Video, YouTube for $3.99. Actually, it's on Prime Video for free, or Vudu for $3.99 as well. So
there you go. It is 100% worth $3.99, unless it's the only $3.99 you have, in which case sub to the Patreon instead.
Yeah, then you save 99 cents.
See, tell you what, if you sub to the Patreon for $3, I will send you a digital copy of the movie. So go, just do that. Go through me. Is that illegal? I don't know. All right, let's close this one up. This was fun. I think we both recommend The Killing.
100%.
I'm very excited to watch more Kubrick and more Carpenter as the series goes on.
That's it for me. Everybody have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Bye.